student, 1922.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was just after the Second Great War.
Mm-hmm. Did you come right out of high school?
Right out of high school. I was about 17 years of age at that time. And so my career has really been involved with education in all forms.
When you were in the normal school, all the boys were lumped into one class, weren't they?
Yes, we had 60 men, of course. The numbers were quite different at that time. They dropped from about 260 down to 30. Actually, when I went back to teach at the normal school, it looked as though the normal school had reached the lowest ebb that it would ever reach. Because as I say, there were only 30 there. And we moved out of the normal school, and we conducted classes in the Memorial Hall just behind the Christchurch Cathedral.
You were there during those turbulent years of trying to put up with poor
conditions. Oh, yes. But for 3 years, we were in the Memorial Hall, and that was when I went back to assess them. I was principal of the, or vice principal of the Northward School at the time. And Dr. Denton was the principal of the normal school. Have you heard of Dr. Denton?
Oh,
you
yes.
Must
have. Yes.
Well, he was there for 3 years. And I certainly very, very well remember the fact that he came and pled with me to come to the normal school. But I think it really was a case of pleading, would I come, you know, because he was on his last legs as far as the normal school is concerned. So I finally said to him, well, I'll come to the normal school, providing, of course, that you can make the arrangements and provide the substitute, because I said I am involved with the Victoria School Board, so I can't very well carry on in this manner. So finally he says, well, I think this can be arranged. Not in a little did I think of what would happen, of course, but he approached the school board and asked for my services, and it was granted. And the sum and substance was that he was a substitute. For 3 years, Dr. Denton was my substitute at the Northward School. Well, that was quite something, because he was nearing the end of his career, and he was an older man, of course. So it must be very difficult for him to carry on at my place when I went to the normal school. So I traveled there, oh, 3 times a week. And the number grew from 30 to about 70 in 3 years' time, which wasn't very good, of course, considering the numbers at the normal school in later years. But anyway, that's what happened. And during the normal school at that time, there was almost as many, well, I wouldn't say as many, but a large number of the staff, out of all proportion to the number of students. We had about 10 members on the staff, if you can imagine that. So.
Well, you taught part-time, though, did you?
I taught part-time.
Did everybody?
Oh, no. Well, they did the entire part. They carried a full load, of course, but they certainly taught part-time. When I was teaching, I took the whole staff, the whole student body. So what were they doing during that time? I taught them all. Because the normal school was being used for a military hospital. The men were returning from the Second Great War, of course, and they were using that for a hospital. That's why it is so a white building. It didn't always look that way, and the doors were made into sort of a hospital kind of arrangement. But anyway, this lasted for 3 years, and I taught in the Memorial Auditorium. All the students at once. So this student body rose from 70, rose from 30 to 70, which wasn't too many, of course, but still quite a lot of people to teach at once. In which time I was filling in, well, I was occupying the position of art instructor. And at the end of 3 years, the normal school decided they had increased their numbers, so they went back to the normal school. And I must say, the building was very large, of course, far too large for them. But they began to increase, and they appointed somebody to be in charge of art. So that let me out, see. for 3 years, this person carried on, and at the end of 3 years, they had increased to well over 100. And so I was called back to the normal school. That was the year that Hugh Farquhar and I were appointed at the same time, and Henry Johnson. So now we were on, I was on full time, and they were all on full time.
What year was this that you came full time?
1942, and there'll be 3, 6, so about 1948 or 9, in there, some in that direction. But from that time on, it steadily grew. But at the same time, of course, Victoria College was growing more rapidly than we were, of course. And they were crying out for more space. So, to make an end of things, they were given permission to use one end of the normal school, and we used just the other one, other end. So, their principal was Dr. Ewing at the time, and by this time we had a different principal, of course. Dr. Denton had died, and he was replaced with his assistant, Mr. English. So he was the principal at one end for us, and Dr. Ewing at the other end. So that was something else. So anyway, Dr. Ewing died very suddenly of a heart attack. And not too long after that, Mr. English died. So this is a nice way out of things, I suppose, because they're always at one another's, after one another. They did get along well at all. But anyway, Mr. Hickman was the acting principal for the college, and Harry Gilliland was the director of the normal school. He had become the assistant to the principal of normal school, so it was a logical thing for him to step in. So things gradually, of course, went right ahead. Of course, it wasn't easy sailing by any means, but nevertheless, they went ahead, and we gradually grew and grew and grew, and of course, the Victoria College grew and grew, too. As far as we were concerned, we had a nice department established. In fact, we had added to it considerably. Miss Marion Small became my assistant, really, and she was teaching full-time, as was I, too. Now, of course, for bit by bit, we added other courses until we needed more instructions too. So Donald Harvey was appointed, and following Donald Harvey, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. I have to think back a bit. At the two groups began to grow, both groups, we began to need more room. Well, by this time, if I get my book over here, I just jotted down a few things knowing that you were coming, because I can't remember all these details. Somewhere in 1960, well, in the 1960s, I guess, in the early part of the 1960s, it was decided that our place wasn't big enough, so we would have to move out to the other campus. Well, the first person to move was myself and two or three other people, but we had a split campus between the two, between the present campus and the normal school, and we functioned on both campuses. And in order to remedy the situation of the meeting classes, the classes were actually staggered. I had about a 1.5 hour between the two. But from then on, I would say we made steady progress right straight through. A lot has happened since then, of course. But as far as we were concerned, speaking about my part of it, my own department, grew steadily until it became quite a decent size, to what it is today, of course. But what shall I say next?
I was wondering, the instruction that you gave at the normal school, Was it different than the instruction you gave when it later became a college?
Oh yes, quite different. Well, not so different, because this was always my philosophy. No, it hasn't changed a bit, one little bit. I think the actual instruction, as far as we were concerned, was not that different. Of course, you had to sort of follow a pattern. I think that's more or less required of everybody. And our pattern was very much the same as what they were doing at the UBC. Our patterns were really pretty much the same. But apart from, I would say that there wasn't that much difference in the instruction today and the instruction at that time. Now, of course, a lot of other things have been added to the art curriculum, such as the graphics and modeling and clay work and that sort of thing. All these various things have been added.
What would you instruct?
Well, at present, of course. At the very first, I was instructing almost anything. Modeling and painting and design, this is all part of my work. And then later on, of course, we added to our staff, our faculty. And so these things were given by different people. But I think the program at the teacher training part of it was a very, very full program and a very, very well thought of program, I must say. I'm blowing off my own horn this time. But
what were the students expected to do in the art class in the normal school?
Oh, they were very busy. The art class consisted of the students. Well, the classes actually met together and did the work themselves, lots of work. And the senior classes, of course, they did a lot of those things too, in painting and design and all that sort of thing. Just whatever we thought of doing, this is what they would do. They varied a great deal from year to year, of course, depending what you were thinking about at the time. But I can't remember way back all of this stuff, really. You should have come up 15 years ago.
When you were a student, way back in the 20s, did the art class you have then stimulate you, really interest you?
No, actually I must say that the art class that I took at that time was totally opposed. I was totally opposed to it. And what I gave was very different, of course, from what it was before.
Who was your instructor?
Mr. Denton. Mr. Donnell. Donnell. D-U-N-N-E-L-L.
What did he expect of you?
I don't know what he expected of me. But the whole thing was that everybody did the same thing.
Very structured.
Everything was exactly just so. You followed a book and you found out exactly what you should do, and that was it. Now, of course, I didn't believe in that thing at all. My whole early part of my teaching career after the normal school was pretty much the same, because it was also the same throughout the whole province. Everybody did the same thing. Well, that was so far removed from my belief that as soon as I got up to the normal school, I decided to do away with the whole thing. Well, I'm sure it's gone on just like that, because Marion Small has carried the progress program on, I'm pretty sure. You know Marion Small, don't you? Well, she's still out there. Did you take any art at the normal school? At the Victoria College?
No.
Oh. Well, she's almost, she has almost white hair. She's very gray. Pure white, and she's a fine teacher. Now, what else should I tell you?
While at the normal school, you were hired or invited to come as an art instructor. Mm-hmm. Did you teach anything else, or was it just art?
At the normal school?
Mm-hmm.
I taught penmanship.
The MacLean method?
Yes. Well, that's it, you see. In penmanship, everybody did the same thing. In art, it was pretty much a case of everybody doing the same thing. And both of these things had to go very much against my grain, I must say.
Did you find that the principal at the time had a set direction that you must follow, or were you given a little bit of leeway?
Oh, yes, we were given a little bit of leeway, but the department, of course, set down what we should do, really. So that we had a program pretty well set up, whereas today, no such thing exists at all. You are pretty much given the freedom to do what you want. So I found this fine, was fine.
Well, at the normal school, which room did you have for your art instruction?
The normal school, on the top floor, on the extreme west of the building. One room, you see. And this is a great difference from what it is today, but...
What sort of equipment would people use?
Oh, well, they had used pretty much what the elementary school uses. We did nothing more than that, really, at that time. These other things didn't come on until later, but today, of course, anything under the sun, you could certainly expect to see people using. And I think it's become very much more professional and much more sort of I guess you could call it sort of an academic program, but of course it's very different to the other academic things. But it became very much freer, and I must say.
Did you find the students at the normal school were more serious than later on when it became a college and a university?
Well, I must say, perhaps I take a different point of view. I found the students were always very free. And as far as I'm concerned, I think there was a great feeling of rapport between them and me, so that I kind of saw a different side of them, I quite think, to what some people must have felt. No, I think there was a great deal of freedom, and I couldn't imagine anything better than that. And my whole attitude towards the art program became very, very different for the last 25 years. When I first started to teach, I wondered whatever I'd got into it. Because it wasn't my first choice by any means, but I changed to my present attitude, because I felt, well, this is just fine, couldn't be different, and I hope it's still the same.
When you finished at the normal school as a student, did you go teaching right away?
Right away. I started to teach, I just turned 18, so... At that time, of course, all these men from the front were coming home with nothing very much to do, and they turned to teaching for a position, and so it was very difficult to for the like of me, to find any kind of teaching position, because I wasn't known, and I had to fight all the rest of these. I applied all over the province for applications, and most of them didn't even return an invitation. I was finally appointed to Saanich. Now, Saanich at that time was separate from Victoria. And so I taught in all three schools, Solomon School, Cloverdale School, and the Telephone School. And I was moved every year, of course. It was the thing to do for the trustees to move teachers around a great deal. So with the working conditions being such as they were, with all the rules and regulations being laid down, and things being so opposed to what I really believed in, so I found it very difficult to carry on. So finally I got my back up and said, I'm going to leave Saanich, no matter what. So I applied to Victoria, and right away I was appointed. Now, of course, at that time, I had begun to build my reputation, because at that time all of the students, when they finished grade 8, now this is different again today, but they had to write an examination. Every person had to write, for instance, an art examination. And my reputation grew to the point that I think that the students who went through my classes did about the best in the province. Highest marks in the province. So that was what I was thinking about, the reputation. So therefore, this first year that I came into the city, I taught in St. James Douglas School, and because of this reputation, the principal of the Jersey Day School, who was Mr. Hall at the time, asked me if I wouldn't come over to Jersey Day, which was unheard of at that time, too, to ask to by the principal, would I come and teach for him? The idea was, would I teach him, his students, the art program? So I went along to his place finally, and I was placed in charge of the entire art program of the whole school, and also music. Music was one of my favorite things too. So between the art and the music, that's pretty well all that I did.
You were lucky then when you finished normal school to get within the city limits, really.
Oh yes,
you?
I must say I was extremely lucky.
Because most of the students, they went out and they went one-room classes.
No, my whole teaching career was right in Victoria, and Saanich could be considered part of Victoria today, of course. But it was very different in those days.
Can you remember anything about your student year at the normal school? Was there much of a social life?
Well, there was a fair amount of social life. And of course, the principal at that time, Mr. McLaurin, was not a social person, so that he was kind of frowning on that sort of thing. So therefore, I'm quite sure that the students would find it very difficult to sort of meet up to what he would require. But this was common, very common. I think that the whole working of the normal school, as far as the faculty is concerned, was indicative of the feeling of the time. Things were laid down in such a rigid rule that you had to agree to carry on. That was part of the course.
Very formal, wasn't it?
Very, very, very formal. Well, it's just the opposite today at teacher training, for instance. And probably all through the university, is a formal training. It's an informal training. I don't think one has to be tied down rigidly to anything. I'm sure that's probably true to other places, to other things, to other subjects too. I'm talking rubbish, really.
Not really. Did any of your instructors in the normal school really make an impression on you?
On me?
Yes.
I can't really say that they did. I think the whole thing was foreign to my whole attitude. So I don't think they really made much of an impression on me, that's for sure. To tell you the truth, I can't even remember who they were. That's how much of an impression that made on me.
How did you fare in your first practice teaching? Do you remember where your first school was? You had to go out and practice teach.
Well, we did it very differently in that time, because we taught in our practice teaching in groups of four or six once a week. We all went on Friday.
And how many lessons did you teach? Just one each person?
Oh, just one. Yes, one lesson. Yes, between six people, of course.
Did you have any of your instructors come and watch your lesson?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, they used to sit at the back of the room and take it all in. Well, occasionally, of course, but not too often. But they did do that. And the person in the teacher, who was in charge of the classes, of course, watched us very closely, because we were kind of invading their territory. So, well, that sort of thing has gone by the board, too. There again, of course, today it's totally different to what it was at that time, because there's so much more freedom involved today than there was at that time. I think it's really all to the good, except I think maybe they've gone a little bit too far in this matter of freedom. I'd hate to go back over it all again, that's for sure.
I was told that in the 20s, most of the years, each year, the students kept a little vegetable plot, a little garden.
I wouldn't say all of them, but some of them did have a vegetable plot. That was probably part of the science program, and partly due to the fact that people were being encouraged to garden.
Did you have a garden plot?
Well, yes, I worked on it. Mm-hmm.
What did you grow?
Oh, nothing much. Carrots and beets and onions and that sort of thing.
Was it good soil up there? It was pretty rocky terrain.
Not too good. No.
Did you enjoy that?
Oh, yes. Well, I didn't think much about it. I remember one experience, speaking about the normal school. Since I say this class consisted of 60 men, and the rest were all women, Miss McFarlane was the household science teacher, and she found herself unable to know what to do with the men. How could she teach all these people? So she decided she'd teach them all at once. And we'd all form sort of a circle around her, and she would teach them all sorts of fancy cooking, range from that sort of thing. And then we'd eat the good sandwiches. That's all our teaching consisted of.
She did try and show you the basics.
Oh, yeah, she showed us the basics. She told us all that went with it. But as far as we were concerned, I'm sure that's pretty well all she could do.
You didn't get a chance to do much in the domestic science room?
Nothing.
You just observed?
Just observed. That was one of the height of our achievements, I'm sure, at normal school. And mind you, it only lasted a year. The normal school, less than a year, about 9 months. That's what normal teacher training consisted of in those days.
What certificate did you get when you finished your normal school?
Just the normal school certificate that we graduated from normal school. After less than a year, and then I think we had to teach for 2 years under an interim time during which we had to prove ourselves. I think it was about 2 years.
Then did you go back for another degree?
No, that's it. And we had, of course, we had every year we had our certificate from the inspector, and I guess we're judged on that.
Did you ever have one of your instructors from normal school come into your classroom with a student teacher when you were out teaching in Saanich?
No, they didn't come to Saanich at all. But
their class too far out, wasn't it?
They're too far out, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you get to school?
Well, I was driving, of course, that time, 18 years of age, believe it or not. So sometimes I took the car. We had jitneys at that time, too. Old Model T Ford cars were sort of used as jitneys. And I went to several of the schools by jitney, if the weather wasn't decent, or by the streetcar. Streetcars are running, of course, at that time,
yes,
too.
Yes, I've heard a lot about the Mount Tommy streetcar, where
yes,
everybody used to take
yes,
it up to the mountains.
Yes, well, I took the Mount Tommy streetcar at the other end, of course. Used to run right out to, well, where Douglas Street is. And so I'd get off the end of the streetcar and walk a short distance.
Were you a Victoria boy?
I was born here, believe it or not.
I was wondering if a lot of the student years, the students came from the interior, and at some points you were segregated, it seemed. You knew certain people from Victoria and you'd stay within that group. Did you get very friendly with the boys from out of town?
Oh, I think so, yes. Our group consisted of, principally laterally. In my own year, they were mostly all from Victoria. But after that, of course, they increased in the enrollment from, as far as the students were concerned, from other places. And between Vancouver and Victoria, they took all the interior. In fact, I would say that probably Victoria got more from the interior than Vancouver. So I would think that the friendship was consisted largely of where these people had come from. It probably still does.
Did you have physical education classes? Was there a sergeant that came down and...
Yes, he was an army man, but he used to give part of his work. He used to be training those students. But, of course, that went with the war record. After the war, of course, immediately after the war, they used to do this at the normal school.
Did you ever partake in any of the tennis championships and ping pong?
Well, not too much at that time, I must say. No, I don't think too much. But I have done this, but not during the normal school.
Do you remember the little plunge baths, the little pools that were in the normal school? I think there was one in the boys' side and one in the girls' side.
Oh, yes. Oh, do you remember? Yes, I do remember them, yes. That's a long time ago.
I'm speaking about the auditorium, which was in the normal school, and there were some beautiful sculptured busts on the side, and at the back of the auditorium there is a high relief frieze. It's a Greek scene of
a
some
Greek,
sort.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you know the history of that?
No, I really don't, but I know what you're speaking of. It is just a reproduction of that.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. We have no records of where any of this came from or what it is, and it's
No, I don't know. It was produced by, in the man Donnell's time, mm-hmm. but not by him, I'm sure of that. No, I don't really know. I'm just sitting there before my time. I think the normal school was built as a provincial normal school in somewhere in the 1900s,
1915 was the first class.
Yes, 1915. I think it was built before that, about a year before that. And it was produced at the same time as the George Day School, which I went to. Well, as a student, of course, I went to the George Day School. But that was before that.
When you did practice teaching, did you practice teach at George Day School?
Well,
there were just two or three schools that they did the practice teaching.
Yes, we practiced at George Day School and Northward School. And Oakland School, I think those are the main schools.
When you had to prepare a lesson.
But I was the person in charge at the George Day School for years and years. Mm-hmm. Then I went from there, transferred from there to the Northward School when the junior high schools were formed. And I stayed there until I moved up to the junior high school. Central Junior High School.
When you were a student doing your practice teaching, you had to prepare the lesson for the...
Oh, yes.
Did you find that the little library in the normal school was very helpful?
Oh, well, of course it was, yes. Everything was in keeping, because you would just simply find what you wanted, and it was all laid out for you, and so naturally we used that. It's a very different story today. But,
were you directed to specialize at all when you were in the normal school, or do they just say, well, these are all your classes and you just go out and teach everything?
All the classes were like, no, there was nothing of what you're speaking about at all. No, as far as the training is concerned, whether you're in 1, 2, 3, or whatever it happened to be, you'd be sure we were doing the same thing. That's what I had against the whole thing, because you couldn't all think the same way, that's for sure.
Everybody was fairly young in the normal school when they were there, weren't they?
Well, I wonder what you think as being pretty young. If you you'd probably range from 18, although it could have gone way up. In my normal school days, there were people that were 40 years of age, so they varied just a great deal.
And you found everybody got along very well, even though they were
seniors? Oh, yes, sure. Of course, all these men who had been overseas for several years, probably a lot of them were going to normal school. We had quite a few of them. Well, George Brand and Winnett Copeland were students, as well as the fact that they went back later on to teach at the normal school. So they were not older than I, not that older than I, but some of the people were much older. Wilfred Ord was a man, he's been dead for years. He must have been about 50 years of age, and several of the others were older.
Did you find that most everybody got through their year at normal school, or?
I would say most of them did. It was a very easy thing to do. No question about it, I'm sure.
Do you remember speaking with your instructors at all? There weren't too many.
I went to see them in fear and trembling. We lined up for in great long lineups in front of the instructor's office door, and waited our turn to be ushered in one at a time, sitting before or standing before the person who was involved. So
they'd tell you that'd be for your criticism.
For your criticism, yes.
They didn't ever really hit you hard. They were quite constructive.
I think that probably most of us quite constructive, but yes, I think it was.
I've heard that Dr. Denton was really a very colorful man.
Yes, that's putting it mildly.
He enjoyed teaching the boys.
Oh, yes.
More so than the girls. The women I've spoken to said that,
is that
they
so?
Didn't enjoy. He didn't enjoy.
Well, he's a rough character. Mm-hmm. Probably that was the reason. He was a rough character.
Was he your teacher that you registered with in the morning?
Let's see. I'm not too sure. I think he might have been. I'm not too sure.
You had a morning assembly,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, we had a morning assembly, yes. I'm kind of mixed up that part of it. I think maybe Dr. Denton was our homeroom teacher.
Those morning assemblies were quite an event.
Oh, yes. Well, in some respects, that was quite a good thing. I think that it gave the students who were being taught a chance to get up and sort of feel what they could do in front of people. Gave them more confidence.
Do you remember anything that you put on or your class put on?
No, I can't. I can't really remember.
I've heard there's plays and people talked about their hometown.
Yes, I think that they were required, if possible, to speak about their hometown, because of course, again, they were coming from all parts of the province. And so that was one way for the people to become familiar with the province, because they might be going out to teach there. So that we're getting our stories mixed. Now, this was latterly, when I went back to teach. There weren't so much, when I was a student at the normal school, involved in coming from other parts of the province. But this developed differently later on. At the normal school, before it became part of the university.
It was when in the 40s and early 50s that when you were teaching at the normal school, they still had the Friday afternoon assembly.
Oh,
during
yes.
the day.
When it was of their own, not part of the university, then we had full access to the auditorium, and it was used, of course, every day for meetings, both in morning assemblies. And the afternoon for these literary society kind of things.
They were quite an event, too.
They were quite an event, yes.
Were you a sponsor of any of the groups?
I was in charge of the art part. As that was my one thing. We had to produce the various annals of the history. We actually printed those whole bunch, about 500 of these. Literally, of course, they grew up to that number. So I think that that was my main achievement.
Well, that was quite a job.
Well, it certainly was. We had did a great deal.
What would you have to do? Type it up and get it ready for the printer?
This was done, this was typed by the printer, and the offset press. It was done in rough, of course. Then we assembled the whole magazine. It came back to us just in its loose form. So we had to assemble the whole magazine, and that was a big job too. So everything had to go in just so. So I can remember I used to get the students on in the afternoon to come up to the school, and I'd set out all these pages, because there are all these pages in the book, of course, one after the other. So I had this gang of students going around, picking it one at a time, all the way right around. So, believe it or not, we were able to finish the whole thing in a very short time. Really.
Everybody joined nearly all the clubs, didn't they? Or at least one.
One,
everybody
yes.
really participated.
Yes, yes. I think it was just one. But, yes, that's true.
I'm skipping back again to when you were a student. There was a, was there a music teacher there?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But again, of course, the music was very different to what it is today.
What did you have to do in the music? Do you remember?
Well, again, in the music, we, as far as our class was concerned, we met our music teacher in the auditorium where the piano was, and she would play on the piano certain little things. Again, we were supposed to do that. That's all that we would, that's all it would consist of.
Did you ever have to audition to show what kind of voice you had?
Oh, I think so.
Was there a school choir then?
Not as such, no. But of course, I did a lot of work in when I was teaching. Of course, I did a great deal of work in the training of choirs.
Did you?
Oh, a great deal. Music festival was just coming into its own, and I sort of at an early age developed a great deal of ability, I guess, in voice training. So it wasn't too difficult for me to carry along with this.
Did you help with the music at the normal school when you were up there?
Not the normal school. No, I'm speaking
this
of after the normal
afterwards.
School. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I trained a great many choirs and the festival work all through the high, well, all through my school career, really, except when I went to university. I didn't have anything to do with it then, of course. But in my early days, I did a great deal of singing and piano playing, that sort of thing. I did a great deal of music myself.
Did you ever, as an instructor at the normal school or the college, find any student who was particularly talented? Do they come off and you see these people?
Oh, around? I would say yes, they do. They do come off, and I would say that at least one a year, but not too many, of course. You wouldn't even notice them at that time. But I think of the people who are very, very gifted, certainly they came quite often.
You'd never encourage them to specialize in art if they were.
Oh, yes,
for
I surely did, yes.
Even as a normal school student? If, they were taught everything.
They were taught everything,
yeah.
Yes.
Would you just kind of say, maybe later on, you know, or just lean towards art?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I can remember one own case that a young fellow was very gifted, and his father wanted to know what, he came to see me, and wanted to know what could he do for his son. I said, well, you can't do better than what you're doing, just sitting to carry on with art. He's still teaching. He's one of the most prominent teachers in the province. He's teaching art. So that's the kind of thing I often had, yes.
Do you feel that your training at the normal school helped you? Really?
I think really that, are you speaking about myself? I really think that my training at the normal school and at the university too, perhaps more at the university, was inclined to encourage me a great deal, because all my work developed mostly at that time. Now, of course, I have been painting since I was about 5 or 6 years of age, so that's a long time too. I can show you some things downstairs that I produced way back in 1915, 16, 17, along in there. I've got a portrait of my mother downstairs, which I did in 1936, and I think it's probably one of my best paintings. So it hasn't changed that much. And these were done just 2 years ago, so they haven't changed very much.
You must have felt it was quite an honor when Mr. Denton approached you to come as teacher.
Oh, it was an honor. It was an honor, yes. In spite of what I may have thought, I don't think he realized what kind of a person I am, but he was destitute. He really quite beside himself as to, well, what could he do? He'd have to have somebody. And so I was a some person.
And so people were appointed then. They didn't write and ask for a job up there. It was
yes, that's true. And then when Dr. Denton died, and I, for 3 years, went back to teach at the junior high school, then after that, the art position became vacant, And Mr. English, who was now filling in for that position, he came around to see me and said he'd like very much for me to come to the art, to the normal school and teach art. I said, well, I'd have to think seriously about it. And I thought many times that I would never have anything to do with the normal school. And I carried around my application for a long time. I didn't even post the darn thing. Then finally, I thought, well, I guess the day before the appointments were to be made, I thought I'd better put it in. So that's what landed me at my job.
Well, did you find that those part-time years when the normal school was up at the Memorial Hall, that you just found that wasn't too encouraging?
Well, it was more encouraging, yes, because it was so different to the training that I'd had before. But I found that my experience stood me in very good stead, because for a number of reasons, it got me well acquainted with what I would have to accept at the normal school. And it also gave me a chance to explore things that I could do on my own, which I did a great deal of. So I think that probably this stood me in very good stead. Anyways, I've had no regrets. In spite of the fact of what I have said, my years have been very happy, especially during the university.
Just one more question about those years of Victoria College. You said that really your instruction didn't change that much.
My own instruction? Mm-hmm. No, it didn't.
A lot of things did change, like traditions sort of fell, like the little morning assemblies and the closeness of the students and teachers.
Oh, yes, that's true, yes. But as far as my own work is concerned, I don't think it's changed a bit, really. Well, I wouldn't say not a bit, but not very much. I think my method of teaching laterally, this is 10 years ago, of course, had not changed very much.
Did you find the atmosphere was different for your teaching? Or did it stay basically the same?
Basically the same. Mm-hmm. Now this, of course, again, is when I went back to teach. Mm-hmm. But my instruction blossomed a great deal, I think. Freedom was certainly always very, very prominent. I never tried to encourage any of the students to follow a rigid line and to do the same sort of thing that everybody else did, because I was totally opposed to this. And I think really that that was the reason for my success, because I felt that every person had some ability, no question about it. And I think I was really able to convince the students of this importance, that they could produce too. I can remember one time when there was a group, the doctors, it was the doctors and their wives, were at Meakin Convention in Victoria. We were at the Normal School, of course, at that time. And we were in the McLaren building, named for the same man, McLaren. And it was the summertime. The door of my classroom was wide open. And suddenly I realized I was surrounded with all these wives outside, facing the room, and standing looking at what was going on. So I went outside and I said, well, of course, I spoke to them, and they said, well, these must be gifted people. I said, well, they're just the regular run of students, nothing gifted, really. But, they said, you could possibly do this sort of thing with just regular students. I said, of course we could. And I said, if you'd like to roll up your sleeves and come in, I'll put you in a class too. You can do the same thing too. Oh, no, we'd never go over that. Oh, I said, you certainly would. Maybe not for a little while, but you'd certainly get busy and do it too. Because I believe in the fact that you can all do the same thing. So that's what I had to work with. I think my work was quite successful.
Did you teach the summer school as part of normal school, or was that university?
The university.
The university summer school, yeah.
I'm not too sure when this was that I'm speaking of, but it doesn't matter anyway. But there's a class of fairly mature people, and we got around to the point where we were making sort of picture making, as it's called. And I talked about the various things, but at no time did it say what you should do. I was going to leave it to the students to do what they thought they should do. And one student simply was bogged right down. She couldn't do a thing. Her paper was in front of her, nothing on it. So I went back by her desk and I said, "Well, now, what is wrong? She says, "You haven't said what we're to do." I said, "Well, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I just want you to get busy and do whatever you know yourself." So finally she gradually started. I said, "Look, when you get this thing sketched, I'll come around and see you, and I'll read your work." That's the way I put it. "And I'm pretty sure I'll be able to tell what it is you're doing." So after a great deal of effort, she must have started, because she had something that anybody could certainly tell what it was. So she just had this sort of built up in herself that she couldn't do this and she couldn't do that. I'm quite sure of that. And we must have had a lot of people in a similar position, because I found that a great many of the students were just simply fighting for all they could possibly manage. And my main job really was to try to break down that feeling of inferiority. So I think that is very true, probably, with most people. They can do far more than they think they can do. In fact, they can do anything, because there are no rules that says that you must do certain things in a certain way. And this has been my firm philosophy, that you're not tied down in any way to rigid rules and regulations. Because who says that a tree must look like the trees outside? They don't have to look like that tree, those trees. You can make them any way you want. And who's to say that what you're doing is wrong? So anyway, that's my whole philosophy. Teacher training at the university. That's been my most, the last 30 years, I guess, involved with. I really think it's a wonderful training for a person to be involved with. And if they didn't use it, then they always have something to fall back on. I think that many of them would use it, but not necessarily for any great length of time. I'm sure that many of the women would not use it very long, but they might use it for some years. Or they could come back to it again, because so many of the teachers are widowed, that sort of thing, and they might even have to teach after it. So they are given that confidence. They've got a worthwhile job to teach.
It's also used as a stepping stone to other things.
Yes, it's also used as a stepping stone. A person can teach for a certain length of time and then go into something else. But there again, they can always fall back to teaching if they find they can make a go of it. I think it's a marvelous thing.